Greetings. My name is Blake Schmida,
alongside Nicolette Rojo,
and welcome to the American Valor Podcast. On the American Valor Podcast, supported by the Bob Feller Act of Valor Award Foundation, our goal is to educate and inspire with acts of valor that embody the traits which National Baseball Hall of Famer and United States Chief Petty Officer Bob Feller lived by. Citizenship, service above self, and commitment to country in a time of great national need.
Welcome back to the American Valor Podcast, folks. I'm your host, Blake Schmida, here alongside my co-host, Nicolette Rojo. And we are joined today by a very, very special guest, Command Sergeant Major John Raines of the Army National Guard. John, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful.
Awesome. Well, John, we just kind of like to jump right in here and let the guests familiarize themselves with our guest here. So I was wondering if you could give us a bit of background on your career in Armed Forces and how it brought you to your current position as Command Sergeant Major of the Army National Guard.
Yeah, certainly. So I've been in a while. So you don't get to be the Army National Guard Command Sergeant Major without being in a relatively long time period. So I'm no exception to that. I've been in 34 years coming up this August. So I started my career as a soldier in the regular Army. And I've not always been an infantryman. I started out my career as a communications specialist. And did pretty well on my scores. So they sent me to my first AIT. It was a year long. And I went out to Fort Huachuca, Arizona, and was out there 4 short months, and Desert Shield, Desert Storm happened. So I deployed overseas for that. And when I came back, I decided that I wanted to join the infantry. So I reclassed into the infantry, which I've pretty much been an infantryman the rest of my career. So my first 2.5-3 years in the Army, I spent as a communications specialist. And then after I came back from that deployment, I moved on into my infantry career and started that career. And I had probably around a 10-year career in the regular Army and decided that I wanted to get out and come back home. I was from a firefighting family. My dad was a firefighter. He was always on me to come back home to Montgomery, Alabama, to join the fire department where he worked at. I had a family. My wife, I was married a couple of months before I came into the Army. So I will actually hit my 34th wedding anniversary in June and my 34th military anniversary in August, both on the 17th of both of those months. So she went beside me as I traveled into the Army. And then we had our 2 children, a daughter first and then a son later. And so when we got out and came back home, I became a firefighter and I was content being a firefighter, and I didn't want to throw away 10 years of service. So I joined the Army National Guard. So I was a regular traditional soldier, you know, doing the regular 39 days a year, 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. And, you know, everything's going great. And I will tell people, often that I was probably not the best guard soldier during that time period. You know, I had these things in my mind about the guard, you know, coming from the regular Army, and, you know, I probably had not, you know, dedicated myself to serving in the guard like I could. And this event happened. I was getting off from the fire department one day, and it was 9/11, September the 11th, 2001. And we do roll call in the fire department. And everybody knows what happened on 9/11, you know, two planes flew into the World Trade Centers. And that really changed my military career. When that happened, I knew right away that, hey, I got to get going. I got to become the NCO I know I can be, and the soldier I know I can be. And I got to start training my soldiers to survive on the battlefield, because it was pretty obvious that that was an act of terror. And so at that point, you know, a light flipped in my head, and I became, you know, the soldier that, you know, that everybody wants to be, and started training my soldiers so they could survive on the battlefield. And sure enough, We got activated. We did not deploy forward during that time period, but we got activated to go guard some installations around the state of Alabama. And my company was tassed with going to guard an Annis Army Depot. I had been a firefighter for about 4 years during that time period and been in the Alabama National Guard for about 4 years. And so that's really, you know, the event that really defined most people that serving now, define their career. You know, because that's what saw us deployed so many times over and over again. It's why a lot of people join to serve, you know, to go and make sure that never happens on American soil again. So that was really a defining time, not only in my life, but a lot of soldiers' lives. So after that, I moved over to the Mississippi National Guard. Stood up their civil support team over there, and that was my first active position in my Guard career. And pretty much I've wore the uniform ever since. I never went back to my firefighting job at that point, and I stayed pretty much on active orders from that point forward. To the tune of now I've got 31 active federal service years out of my soon-to-be 34 total years. But I did numerous assignments, which, you know, I left Mississippi and went to be the J3 senior enlisted leader at Indo-PACOM, travel around the Pacific, you know, to our partner nations, trying to build that partner capacity so we could form coalitions, because that's how we fight wars. We don't do anything by ourselves. So one day I got called back to Mississippi and the TAG wanted me to come back and be the state SART major. So I came back and became the state SART major, and then became what they call the CSEL, which is over both the Army and the Air at a later point in time. And then that found me in my current role as the Army National Guard SART major. I had always been involved at the national level once I stepped up to that state SART major CSEL role and on a thing called the Command SART Major Advisory Council, and just started serving at the national level on projects, you know, that we needed to do things different or do things better across the country. And I would say that probably got my name out there and developed a, you know, a solid reputation amongst the country, which is probably one of the reasons I got selected to be the 13th Army National Guard CSM. But that's pretty much my military career. I talked a little bit about my family, you know, because I always want to lead with my core values of God, family, country, and service. And so, like I said, my wife Karen and I have been married before I went into Army, which will soon be 34 years. We've got a 33-year-old daughter and a 30-year-old son, and we've got three granddaughters that are 9, 3, and 2.
That is amazing. And yeah, I know you mentioned you were from Alabama and had those upbringings of, you know, not necessarily military service, from what I understand so far, but as a fireman, you know, there's certainly plenty of parallels there, and definitely an honorable profession as well, and definitely fitting of your core values. And it sounds like, you know, the traumatic events of 9/11 kind of pushed you towards that. But, you know, could you expand a little bit about how exactly you were inspired to join our nation's service after those events, and maybe, you know, what character traits being a fireman had that led you to your service?
Yeah, I would say, you know, first I was a soldier first before I was a firefighter. You know, so I would say that even during those 4 years where I came back home to be a firefighter, I was really still a soldier at heart. And I wasn't one of those soldiers that got out of the Army and because I didn't like the Army. You know, I just, you know, I was in that time period of my life, like a lot of people when they're in that 25 to 33 year old age group, they start, you know, second guessing the decisions they made in their life, and they start thinking, hey, am I on the right path? And I was no different. You know, I started questioning those things, and I started thinking it was nothing to do with the military. People always ask, hey, what could the military have done different to have kept you in? Honestly, I don't know that they could have done anything different. I was having a great career. I was, you know, started out as a commo guy. Now at this point, you know, I'm an airborne ranger. I had been through the Special Forces Assessment Selection course. I was on my way to the Q course, and I had all those things going for me. And still, I just wondered what's the other side? What's on the other side? Am I away from my kids too much? Do I want my own house? Do I want to cut my own grass? You know, do I want to do those things that the military is not providing? And I didn't really know the answer. And there's only one way to find out is you got to kind of go, see. And, my dad caught me at a good time because he was always after me to come back home. So he caught me at a good time where I was kind of in between things and I was waiting to reenlist and I didn't have a commitment. I was waiting on some bonuses to go up and he just caught me at the right time. And I decided to come out and try my hand at that side of, I don't want to say civilian life, but another service oriented field, being a firefighter. And I would tell you, I loved being a firefighter. You know, it's got a lot of comparisons that are similar to the military. It's got that team, dynamic that other people, are counting on you to get the job done. You can't go in and fight a fire by yourself. So, you can't go and win a firefight, on a military battlefield by yourself. So there's a lot of correlations about you depend on the people to your left and right and your things that you're doing. You're training yourself to be the most competent professional that you can be in both fields so you can accomplish the mission. One is defeating, our enemies on the field of battle and surviving and being the most lethal force that you can be. The other is, saving life and property, by distinguishing, the enemy is the fire. So a lot of similarities. But when I got out, I took a lot of my squad with me. I was a squad leader. A lot of them come back home with me and became firefighters with me. So I was a good squad leader and, they loved me as their squad leader and they wanted to come, hey, if you're leaving, we're leaving with you. So they came back home. Some of them even lived with me for a little while they brought their families down and established themselves in the community and became firefighters. And, I still had some of my team there with me and they became my new teammates in the fire service. But when I would talk to them, they would always tell me, hey, are you okay? And they'd always be asking me questions like, and I'll be like, well, I'm fine. And they were like, well, something's just missing. You're just different. And really what was missing was I was born to be a soldier. And no matter how much I enjoyed firefighting and how good firefighting is, God made me to be a soldier. And that's what was missing. So that's a little bit about the correlation of firefighting to the military. That I can lay out for you.
What a great story and background, and that is a great transition from firefighters to serving our country for the Army and its National Guard. Now, kind of diving into that, and you kind of touched upon it a little bit in the beginning in your introduction, how you were deployed in Desert Storm and in Desert Shield, Operation Iraqi. So you've been quite around the world quite a bit. Could you tell us a bit more about what it's like to serve and lead overseas and what those experiences really mean to you now today?
Yeah, I share those experiences a lot of times with my Guard soldiers because, when you look around, we say this a lot to ourselves. We really turn over number-wise in the Army, period, no matter what component you're talking about. We turn over about 15% to 20% of our force every year. So that means numbers-wise, every 5-6 years, we have a whole new Army, numbers-wise, in the Army. So it doesn't take long before you turn around and you start looking that, hey, there's a lot of people that have not experienced the things that somebody's experienced that has been in 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, much less 34 years. So when you start looking around and you start talking to them about your experiences, I tell all the guardsmen that have never deployed that, because they're concerned. When you give them that deployment order, they're worried about going overseas. And, there's the serenity prayer, that, hey, you know, worry about the things you control, and try not to worry about the things that you don't control. So one of the things I tell them is that the things you control is making sure you're ready, making sure you're prepared, making sure you're competent, that you're a professional, that you're, know that you're doing all the reps and sets that it takes to be a good team member, you know, because everybody's got their responsibility on that team. So we talk about that piece, you know, but the other thing I talk to them about is the experiences. Some of my most positive experiences are in that deployed environment, you know, and that's what some of my closest friends that I have and I will have for the rest of my life are the friends that I've made in that environment where, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen, you know, from second to second. And the truth is there's a lot of boredom, you know, on a deployment, and you never know when that boredom is going to be shattered by, you know, sheer, you know, chaos, you know, the next second. But you got to be ready, and you got to rely on your training, and you got to rely on your teammates, you know, that they've taken their jobs just as serious as you've taken them. But there's a lot more positives that I think I take from my overseas time, whether it be, you know, being my first deployment where I was the E4 and below, you know, a specialist and below, or my subsequent deployments where I was always in leadership positions. I always take more positives from those times than negatives from those times. And those are times that, you know, that we'll remember. We just happened to set this meeting coming out of Memorial Day weekend. So, you know, we just had time to reflect on some of the people that gave the ultimate sacrifice. And I just happened to be down at the, you know, Arlington National Cemetery for the laying of the wreath laying ceremony with the president, the vice president, and all of the Department of Defense leadership, where we got to, you know, recognize that service that all those great Americans have given for their country. That you know, you can't even count the rows and rows of stones that are laid out in Arlington National Cemetery and cemeteries all around the U.S. and all around the world that recognize the over a million Americans that have been given that sacrifice. So it's just opportune time that we're talking to you today, but we're just coming out of Memorial Day weekend to remember all those who have given the ultimate sacrifice.
Absolutely. Yes. We're very appreciative of your service overseas. And I'd like to kind of pivot a little bit and talk about, you know, your domestic service here in the States as part of the Army National Guard, you know, definitely a storied career. And I had a couple of quick questions. I was wondering if you could expand on maybe what you're up to now, you know, what kind of your role entails in the Army National Guard, and also a little bit maybe about your experience at the U.S. Army War College. I know you had helped in classes there, and what you find most compelling about that experience as well.
Yeah, you know, my current role as the Army Guard Sergeant Major, you know, is to tell the Guard story. So, you know, and that's to tell the Guard story to several people. Sometimes that's to tell the Guard story to Guardsmen. Because, you know, Guardsmen get so bogged down in what they're doing that they always don't take time to step back and see the whole picture and to see what all is the Guard accomplishment, you know. And the Guard, you know, has accomplished so much, and we have been utilized on so many different fronts. You know, we are still, you know, performing our wartime mission. I just got back Thursday from Syria, Iraq, and Kuwait. Visiting our soldiers that are forward deployed in the CENTCOM AOR. And that includes the only armor brigade or the only brigade combat team that is forward deployed to a combat zone right now, which is the 37th Infantry Brigade Combat Team headquartered out of Ohio with units, downtrace units in Michigan and South Carolina. So, you know, I was just, you know, not even a week ago, sitting in a, you know, operations center, looking over a shoulder of a young E4 infantryman sitting there watching, you know, screens for, you know, drone threats coming in a forward operating base that had a drone land in it a few weeks before that had killed a contractor and wounded six soldiers. So, So, but a lot of people don't realize that, hey, we're still out there doing that. And that's a guard unit. That is a 100% guard unit doing that mission. And we still have guardsmen in harm's way, whether it be there. We are contributing to the Ukraine, European theater right now. We've got guardsmen all over the world, you know. And sometimes part of my job is just to let people know that the guard is ready, relevant, and on the job every day, whether it be our warfighting mission or whether it be the one that we always see. You know, we always see the guard responding to, you know, a hurricane, responding to a wildfire, responding to a tornado or floods or, you know, civil disturbance. We see the guard in those roles because our governors, you know, count on our guardsmen to go out there and answer the call when they need it on the state level. But we're out there both on the state level and on the war fighting side of the house. We are out there. And we are as busy today as we've ever been. And that is one of my my core jobs is to make sure people know that, you know, and it's make sure the American people know that, make sure the guardsmen know that, make sure that our legislators know that. So when they're deciding on budget priorities, when they're deciding on, you know, how we're going to the end strength of the military is going to look, that they know that, hey, the guard is an integral part of the defense of our country. And we make up 50% of the combat power of the United States Army resides in the Army National Guard. So that is a big part of that role. And you were talking about when I go to the War College, it's one of my favorite stops. I go to the War College 3 times a year. We teach a class called the Nominative Leader Course. And in the Nominative Leader Course, that really what that means is on the NCO side, when you start working at the general officer level, we send you to the War College to educate you to work at that level. And what that education, we call it the Nominative Leader Course. Well, me and my wife both go up there. My wife is one of the senior spouse mentors for that course. So when the spouses come up there for the last 2 week course, when the spouses come, she's the senior spouse mentor for the Army. And then I go up there that week and I stay for 3 or 4 days. And I talk to those Nominative Leader Course students that are multi-compos. So they're the regular Army, the Guard, and the United States Army Reserve. And I tell them what I just told you. You know, I tell them about the Guard. So therefore, when they become senior leaders, you know, running the Army, that they have an appreciation for what the Guard brings to the team. And that's one of my main efforts is to make sure that I'm educating our future leaders to make sure they realize, you know, how big a player we are, you know, and how really how competent and professional our soldiers are. I tell people all the time in the competitive space, because we like to have competitions in the Army to measure our readiness. You know, you probably heard of the International Sniper Competition. The Guard took 1st, 2nd, 4th, and 8th. An international sniper competition. You know, that top 10 was rounded out by the 75th Ranger Regiment, with several teams in the top 10. A team from Special Operations Command was one, and then an international team, and then 4 teams from the Guard, including the winning team. We put 2 teams in the top 10 of the best Ranger competition. The Ganey Cup, which is the best scout section, we finished 2nd in the best Ganey. We had 3 finishers in the top of their weight classes in the Army Combatives tournament. So, and I could go on and on and on. But, you know, I tell you that to give you an example of some of the things when I tell the Guard story. I want to make sure people know that, hey, when the Chief Staff of the Army says winning matters, the Guard gets that. Winning matters. And we are winning more than we're losing, you know, in the Army National Guard.
That is all awesome. Congrats to the Guard for placing those competitions, first off.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Of course. Now, you kind of touched upon it a little bit towards the end. We talked about educating the younger soldiers, the Guard, etc. So now we're going to dive in a little bit more about that. And you and your wife have clearly established, like, what it means to be a leader across spouses and just a guard. Now, in what ways do you believe other famous athletes, including the very own, the Bob, Bob Feller, essentially the reason for our foundation. What ways do you believe those type of figures can serve, just like how you do, as an example of service to our nation among youth that's in the Guard and just really our youth in general?
You know, that's a question that we're struggling to answer right now across our Army. You know, we are struggling with our recruiting numbers, and we're struggling to meet what we call our end strength, which we have a cap that Congress sets and says, hey, your Army is going to be this big. You know, this is how many is going to be in a regular Army, this time he's going to be in the Guard, and this time he's going to be in the reserves. And we're all struggling to meet that number. We're doing better this year than what we've done. We look back and, you know, we try to figure out reasons why that is. And sometimes we point fingers and we say, hey, you know, well, this generation's this, you know, or this generation's that, you know. And I always tell people, I said, yeah, that's really going to get them to join. You know, I know that when you call me names or you say something about me, that really gets me on your team. And I tell people, hey, you know, we got to turn that narrative around, you know, and we got to take responsibility and we got to figure out what we're doing wrong. Because, you know, there's plenty from this generation that are joining, and this generation all raised their hand in a time of crisis. When I raised my hand, you know, there was no war going on. I didn't know, you know, you kind of know you're going into the Army and there's possibility you could deploy and you could go do things, but it wasn't right there in your face. It wasn't going on real time. So, you know, but this generation, you know, they know that, hey, when they raise their hand, they're probably signing up that they're going to go overseas, and they're, you know, they're that first code, first stands of the code of conduct. I'm American fighting in the forces which guard our country and our way of life, and I'm prepared to give my life in its defense. You know, that when they know when they say that, hey, that's really what they're coming in, that possibility really exists. And so I think we ought to give them credit for that, and that we ought to accept, you know, our place in that. Hey, how do we inspire them? How do we motivate them? How do we encourage them? And oftentimes I think it's by not what we say, it's by what we do. We got to get out there. And if we say that people are first, you know, we gotta make sure our actions match that people are first, you know, that, hey, we're delivering on those core things that cause people problems. You know, we know what causes family problems. You know, I come from a split family, and what caused my family problems all the time was money, you know? So we know that, hey, we got to pay our people, and we got to pay them on time, and we got to live up to our contractual commitments, and we got to put a good product on the table, and we got to start delivering on the things that, you know, that soldiers shouldn't have to think about, you know, and then we gotta, it's not hard to convince people that doing soldiers stuff is fun. I mean, we've all seen the commercials, you know, with the obstacle courses, and we've all seen those kind of things. You know, that's, it doesn't take, you know, people pay to go do that stuff. I mean, I just did, I think 4 or 5 weeks ago, I did a Rugged Maniac mud run. You know, I think I paid $90 to go do an obstacle course in the mud. So, but the Army will let us do that stuff for free. So we got people paying to do all the kind of things that, you know, we'll let them do for free in the military. We just gotta do a better job of, you know, showing them the values that exist and making sure that we live by those values. And those values just isn't something to memorize and that you can just, you know, recite, but the people see your daily walk. It's when I talk about my core values of God, family, country, and service, I want you to see. I don't want to have to tell you those are my core values. I want you to watch me and be able to say, hey, those are his core values, you know? And I think that's what we got to get all our leaders to do, from first line leader all the way up to the most senior leaders in our organization. And, you know, when you talk about Bob Feller, you know, and you talk about country and service, I mean, you know, what better example? I mean, he's out playing baseball for a living, you know, making a healthy living, and you know, Pearl Harbor happens. And then what's he do? He hears it on the radio and he says, hey, you know, he felt that calling. Hey, I got to go serve my country. So, you know, so nobody had to ask him, was country and service one of his core values? You saw it through his actions. And I can't, you know, I, of course, I didn't serve with Bob Feller, but I can't help but think that the people that served with him saw his core values lived out in him every day in his walk.
Excuse me. Very powerful, powerful words. And we can all really agree that one part of core, really your core values, Bob's core values, aligns with a lot of things in our country right now, including America's pastime, the game of baseball itself. As we transition and wrap things up, we found that you're a big baseball guy yourself. We love to hear really about your favorite team, favorite players, past and present. We always ask our guests this as well.
You know, when I grew up, there was really three sports. You know, it was basketball, baseball, and football. So I like all three. Of course, I'm from Alabama, so you know, I would say college football is my all-time favorite. But being from Alabama, we didn't have many pro teams, you know. So I was a big baseball player as well. I played all three of those. My favorite team and my favorite players all come from one team. The closest pro team to us was Atlanta. So the Atlanta Braves, by far and away, my favorite baseball team. And my favorite players on that baseball team were two generations. They were the generation that I watched growing up, which were the Dale Murphys, you know, Bob Horner, Pascual Perez, Glenn Hubbard, those, Mark Lemke, which people probably don't even know who he is, but if the Braves hadn't made a couple of errors in a couple of World Series, he would have been an MVP, you know, for the Braves in a World Series. So, but all those guys, they were my favorites growing up, but we didn't win anything. You know, we fumbled it all away. And then come the second coming of the Braves, you know, with Tom Glavin and Greg Maddux and John Smoltz and, you know, all of that later crew, Andrew Jones, you know, so I've had a couple of different, you know, time periods with the Braves. And then I will tell you that, you know, if you want to talk struggles, one of my struggles is, you know, I don't really have work-life balance as much as I would like, and much as I communicate to people, you need a work-life balance. So I kind of missed the whole baseball season when the Braves had their third coming and they got over the World Series hump again. So I couldn't tell you any of the players on the Braves roster for their last World Series, but I was still watching, and I just was not as attuned day to day as I was growing up and as I was, you know, in that other time period, which was, you know, in the mid 90s all the way to the 2000s, because we had quite a run, even though we only won one World Series during that time period. But yeah, I love baseball. I've got a big box down in my garage right now that is filled up with a big cedar box. It's filled up with nothing but baseball cards. So there's no telling how many baseball cards I've got down there. So I like a lot of teams, but the Braves, of course, you know, being America's team, they're my team too.
That's awesome. And I'm not a Braves fan myself, but I can definitely appreciate that early 2000s, mid 2000s era Braves baseball. I know I was a big Chipper Jones fan myself. He just played baseball the right way. So it's awesome to hear. We've had a couple Braves fans on here lately, so can definitely appreciate that franchise, and especially, you know, whether you're paying attention or not, what they're doing now, you know, they've got some exciting young players coming up, and they're primed to, who knows, make it back to another World Series here. But, you know, Command Sergeant Major Raines, we're very happy to have had you here on the podcast. You know, definitely some great advice for our nation, and, you know, an awesome core four values there that we cannot preach more here on the podcast. So Command Sergeant Major Raines, we appreciate you greatly for coming on the podcast.
No, hey, I am very thankful for the opportunity. And, you know, hey, anytime that you guys want to dial me up or use me for anything, I'm free. So like I tell you, my job's to tell the guard story, and there's only one way to tell the guard story, is that's to get with people like you and your organization, and that want to talk to me, and us exchange, you know, communication back and forth, so I can put the guard story out there so everybody can hear, you know, what our great guardsmen are doing, and also offer the opportunity for people that, you know, are looking, may not know their way, may not know what they want to do in their life. Hey, come give us a shot. You know, you don't have to stay in for 34 years. You can stay in for 4 years. You can stay in for 6 years. We offer some great benefits. We'll pretty much, you know, get you your college paid for, and set you on whatever path you want to go on. And I think if you give us a try, that you'll see that, hey, the Army values line up pretty good with my core values, which mean that we generally do a pretty good job of taking care of our people.
Absolutely. We're very proud to be able to help you spread that message here on the podcast, and hope you have a great rest of your night.
All right. Thank you. You too.
To our listeners, this concludes this episode of the American Valor Podcast. This conversation is brought to you by the Bob Feller Act of Valor Award Foundation, the Department of the Navy, Major League Baseball, USAA, BWXT, Huntington Ingalls, and the Cleveland Guardians. Please feel free to leave your comments in the comment section below, and connect with the Bob Feller Act of Valor Award Foundation on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Act of Valor Award. You can engage with the foundation at activevaloraward.org. There, you can learn more about Bob Feller, Jerry Coleman, recent nominees of the awards, view pictures, and sign up for updates, including the American Valor Podcast and more. For Blake Schmida, Leo Manchetti, and everyone at the American Valor Podcast, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.